We'd like to just have some time together here this morning till coffee break, and then kick you all outside again.
One more time.
So that you have one more chance to kind of do whatever you care to do before lunch and the bus. Oh, that's good stuff. So let's begin with a word of prayer, shall we? Gracious God, once again we come before you in thanksgiving for the night of rest and the new day and all its potential that lies before us. May we sense within us your desires for us as individuals and for us as a community this day, that we might in turn be responsive to those desires. Help us, O Lord, to find out what you are up to today and then join in the party. In Jesus' name, amen. For my part this morning, we've got about an hour and a half here. Would like us simply to share whatever and so I've been thinking about questions through the night and this morning as a way of facilitating our time together. And I think I'd like to begin with this question, and that is the question: what's been what's kind of moved for you this weekend that you'd be willing to share or talk about, and what may have moved for you may have nothing to do with specifically the wilderness, or it may be some other issues that you've been thinking about. Often it's interesting how you can come to the wilderness and that kind of get you going on some other issues that have been rattling around with you, or that you brought here, or something. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to ask, what have you been thinking about? Some of it may have come from something someone said over the weekend, or your experience of going out, sitting in the wilderness, whatever. So, I'd like to invite you to just share a thought or two if you have one. Someone will have to be brave and start.
A couple things that you said hit me right where I was living. I had a rough job situation. We talked about corporation and your soul. Put our self-worth into the application. Already we're rethinking this situation and taking the pack out of the wilderness and packing everything up. We get some of the honor of being part of that corporation behind. I did, it's up by 10 miles.
Oh.
Let's see if it stays there.
Evolution.
Sorry.
They're big trees. That's right.
It will be great healing.
Organic material for something to build.
And that's a very problematic situation up there too, hoping that when that walked out, it would be possible. But I think that's blocked out. It's a time to talk.
Sure.
One thing that was really helpful to me was the singing last night, and the idea of intentionally going into the wilderness and seeing some of the pressures and the expectations, even that in many respects look justified, loving, kind, this is what I should do because this is what a good person should do. That's kind of an eye and all that is what we think about Jesus in the wilderness.
problems that I left. And the expression that comes to the mind is, my job is to comfort the afflicted, to afflict the comfortable. And I think you've afflicted me a little bit, and that's good. I came here with very, I didn't know what we were going to do in cross-country ski for 4 days or talk. I really didn't know, and that was okay, just to come experience what was going to happen. And I appreciate that. I've walked the past 2 mornings based upon kind of Dick's mental image of cross-country skiing 5:30, so it knocked me out of bed. This morning I just walked down the road in the lights. I smelled the trees. I could have smelled the turpentine, exhaling, as Dick would say. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of fun.
The grip, tree grip.
Yeah, and that was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. And I think in the video last night, Dupont's expression that we can reach the moon, but we can't reach each other. As a powerful Satan, I'll believe the bad Satan. But again, I think I appreciate my brother. And that's not pushing it again, but it nudging the individual was a little bit more to hold me broader issues, not just in the motorized, but in my relationship.
For those of you that just came in, we're asked the group just to share a kind of whatever you might be willing to share about what's been moving with you this weekend, and those may be issues that are totally unrelated to anything Dick and I have said or that have been said around the village, but have gotten stimulated for one reason or another in you, or you came with them and you've been working with them. So that's kind of what we're doing.
I think that I have three areas that really get me. First of all, when I first came this evening, I realized how far away from God I've gone. From life back. And I think I got back really better. Also, this idea of seeing things. I don't tell you pass over. I have to see what's going on. And I think maybe for me the most important is being touched and touched with other kids who have really enjoyed the feeling of oneness here.
I came across a little that sort of summarizes things Dick said about seeing things in nature and loving and your occupation and the helpfulness of nature and the anticipation. And it's by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who I feel is not quoted enough anymore. Thoreau seems to be the one, but Emerson is sort of his teacher, Thoreau's teacher. In his speech or essay that he wrote on nature, he said, "The simple perception of natural forms is a delight. The influence of the forms and actions in nature is so needful to man that in its lowest functions it seems to lie on the confines of commodity and beauty. To the body and the mind, which have been cramped by noxious work or company, nature is medicinal and restores their tone. The tradesman, the attorney, comes out of the din and craft of the street and sees the sky and the woods and is a man again. In their eternal calm, he finds himself. The health of the eye seems to demand the horizon. We are never tired so long as we can see far enough."
What translated a bit into your own life and situation? What does it say to you?
Well, this is the way I felt in my work. I have not gotten out enough, and it's taken away some of my feelings. I feel more complete when I'm taken a walk in the woods. And then the last part about Dick was saying that part of the excitement of seeing the trail miles away and looking around the bend and anticipating what's on the other side is part of the enjoyment of being out there. And I think we can apply that to our lives too. We get sort of stuck sometimes and we no longer anticipate and have an excitement for what lies ahead.
Let me share an effect that it had on me. And I have a fellow sports nut back there. We were speculating on what the score of the two championship games might have been yesterday at pro football. And there's very few things that would have deterred me from sitting in front of a television set and watching those two games yesterday. Very few things. You know, if wife said, hey, let's go to Woodless. Oh, we can go tomorrow. And, you know, and I didn't miss it at all. I'm not even curious anymore. And, yeah, I've been out here a lot of times. But I really needed the community with you. I needed the chance to be by myself again, and to truly unpack my pack one more time. And it's really symbolic in my life that I would miss those games, and I have no sense of having missed anything. I didn't miss anything at all that's important. So transitory and really so unimportant in my life. Only important because I made it so. And that's good to know. I'll find a reason not to see the next one. It was never a good game either.
I felt the same way. To me, that if I was thinking about that, that tells me how, I guess I was speculating on how important those games are to me when I am in my normal routine. So I come up here and they aren't important. And I was suspecting if I went back down again, they'd become important again. And it just tells me how removed from the real world, in a sense, I am up here, and how I can really commune with nature, and corny things.
Why is that? Now I'm curious. You know, I've completely forgotten about this.
Ruined your day.
Same spot. I didn't even think about it.
Well, it was the two.
NFL playoffs.
NFL.
And what's the other league? AFC?
AFC.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are championship games yesterday.
No.
Why does that captivate us so much? Do you think?
I think for me, I can speak for myself, but it fills voids. It adds excitement. It's an artificial excitement that you subscribe to because you left a void for it. When I came up here, there was no void for it. Therefore, there was no need. You know, that simple. It's not important. I got no money. I mean, it's not important at all.
Passive living.
Yeah. So, I found it with the TV and our daughter to watch it a little bit. I don't turn the TV off during the day. Find it took about a week. She's really a year later. Never even asked to watch it, or even think about it, to find other things, like really finding other things to fill that time and be creative and use your own imagination. And increase my sense of wonder and that childlike wonder and joy. To begin with, I saw a kid coming down, it scared me just to put my foot on the sled and stopped him. By the end, I found myself at the top coming down, taking those risks and the thrill, you know, just that thrill. I did. And I'm trying to keep that alive. And the other thing is the sense of connectedness with everything. Phrases and stuff with me like that. There's something to the fact that the war gets into the war with yourself. But this feeling kind of confused with yourself. that the upheaval of the effect that really comes out to the extent you're irritating it. I like to call it kind of web combination, everything that's effective. It's still easy to tap and tap. We have a chance to do that.
How can we kind of continue that motif, do you think, in the city? That wonder. What are some things that one could choose to do? You mentioned one, turning the TV off. Is that very, that's not very typical, right? What is it? That's an incredible statistic, though. How many hours do Americans watch TV every week? It's pretty incredible.
It's a very simple thing to do, though, and everybody has a power to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like it's hard to do. And I feel specific about it. That was that an average adult, for the average week, I mean, people would watch more TV on the weekends and less on the weekdays, but we'd watch about 4 hours of TV a day.
Is that it? And children watch even more, don't they? The American young person.
I mean,
I've seen.
Know where the addiction comes from.
Right.
But it seems to me that it's under the constant challenge in my life that I watch every day to allow time for that creative energy. Because our lives are so easy and it's so easy to say, yes, I'll let my kids sign up for one more sport or one more art class or one more music session. But what it does to my life, anyway, is make it into a series of events that are pre-structured and it sort of takes out the time to sit around your living room and have a kind of discussion or, you know, delve into the work that. That does happen if you have a couple hours.
Say is what's a meaningful growth experience is maybe nothing from your perspective as a parent to that kid, and minus the emotion. So I think the hardest word thing you find is know. How do you say that that child did not have the opportunity and yet have the bam or con that you need and the growth period times you can't see or mark or record? I think that becomes the challenge is to look at the problem differently. If the option shouldn't be, should they go to soccer or dance, but the option is that's not an option. And I think our society pushes performance, gee, I wish I could do that. And the task, I think, for all of us, in our personal lives, is to sit back every day, whether it's the beginning of the day of meditation, or you begin the day with joy, or with prayer, this is that support that seems to focus on that day. That becomes a challenge is to crash out of the day and sit down. How do you connect yourself to that day if you will?
I might offer a suggestion. I have a place I call my mountain. I go through every morning and I find the slowest grade. And it's kind of based on the metaphor. But nonetheless, it's this mental place I go to and the birds are sheeping and the alpaca and the distance is beautiful. Sometimes it's kind of rainy too. The path gets a little rockier. But then that's where I go for about 15 minutes every day.
Yeah, a lot of people have told me about how those kinds of mental images to meditate on for a short while are very helpful to get them centered. I know for me, if I get centered on the day, the whole day just goes a whole lot better. I just feel like I'm running into it. Mm-hmm. It usually runs over me. There's a variety. I mean, people use, you know, many different ways. I'd like to pick up on this addiction thing. Ann Schaaf is right. We live in an addicted society. And the addictions are powerful. And we're up against some very powerful kinds of powers. That tend to shape the images that we all carry around about life and what's meaningful and, you know, what a full life is supposed to be all about and what success is and so on and so forth. And and I don't think we can underestimate how powerful those forces are. We underestimate them. I think they tend to just take us over. You know, just recognize it. Or suddenly we wake up one morning and say, whoa, what has happened to me? We have to do something really radical to kind of put ourselves in a different kind of place or position so that we can look at things. And maybe that's one value of getting to the wilderness. Thank you.
Yeah, let me take you back to that thought about filling voids and starting in nature. Any void that occurs in a forest or in nature gets filled. A tree falls or a stand burns, nature fills the void. In our lives, any void that, and in society, any void that's created gets filled by something. And for me, it's kind of managing those clearings in our life. And we can take charge. I filled the void that would have been sitting in front of the television set for 5 hours and watching 2 football games that really don't matter to human kind by being here, by choice. But in everyday life, and it is just the conscious effort to not leave void. And maybe fill a busy void with a meditative session. A self-contemplation session. I don't mean that you always keep busy. I don't mean that at all. Cancel something that was going to keep you busy so that you're not busy. You can think or you can read or you can talk to someone and listen to someone. So it is. It's managing voids. Society's the same way. The only reason we have a Sierra Club is there was a void in society. They were needed and they filled. Maybe they filled it long enough, and it's up to us now to take the mission. But that's the path. Fill the clearance. This is nature.
Thank you. I want to push that a little bit. You know, I've heard that saying, nature abhors the vacuum, a lot, but I got to think about it once with the help of some astronomers, and it really, on some scales, is not true. In terms of the big structure of the universe, and then if you look down on the micro scale, most of everything we are is a void. It's really interesting when you think about it. And then in terms of spirituality, I think that at least many people say that prayer is really creating the void and not filling it with anything, but actually emptying it. And I think the book is too, is just about that. that some of it is poured out empty for us. So I like this language. I think it's more than one dimensional, multi dimensional. I commented to a friend of mine when I flew here, and it just makes me sick to see the clear cuts, but in one sense that did remind me of void. Not advocating clear cuts, but I am advocating voids.
Some of the others who haven't had a chance to share, anything been kind of percolating with you these days that you'd be willing to share with us?
Commitment. We're talking about the 49ers and the Cowboys and the other, but we commit ourselves to a team, and that's what makes us interested in it. But we've come to discover those are minor commitments, and we have to search for more major ones. I think we find it in the whole realm of education. And, I don't know, through grade school, high school, probably even undergraduate school, everybody's searching for an absolute answer. When you get into graduate school, rather than having one textbook, you're reading about 20 different books. 20 different authors, maybe not agreeing with one another, and students really can be very confused, obviously. And what is the right answer? And finally, the only way you can come out is by committing yourself to one position or the other. So we just have to look at our commitments. Or was the age in which we live in September.
Right.
I guess something I've thought about a little bit or seen is sort of anticipation. I always sort of visualize the wilderness as something out there. And, maybe I get out there occasionally. I always certainly anticipate that. I think particularly as we looked at some of the slides the other day, recognizing that a lot of those things are just right in front of us here. You don't even anticipate what's right around you, maybe almost on a daily basis, easily, rather than saying 9 months down the road, we're going to anticipate.
That's interesting. I was thinking about all the social science research that was part of my life in the last few years, and I was responsible for recreation. And we began to really find out what recreation experiences were about for all of us. And there were four steps, and I don't want to bore you with that. But the two most important ones are the first and the last. And the first one is anticipation. You think about it, if you're going to take a ski trip today or everything, you get all your things around. You're thinking about the happenings, and there's the steps of getting there in the activity. But the last one then is recall. It's memory. It's mm-hmm. And of course it always grows fonder. And the fact you fell and looked really bad in front of everybody, you don't remember at all. or that the snow turned to rain. But you recall the happy, the good, almost everyone does. And I have difficulty dealing with the people that don't, but most of us remember the good, and it gets better. And we expand probably more than it really was. But anticipation is terribly important. For parents, it's really important that you know that. You build that anticipation for little things in your children, and when you do that, of course, you do it for yourself.
What were the middle two? What are the middle two?
Well, the one is the travel to get there, and the other one is the activity, doing it. Any place, the reason, I'll pursue it for a second then, but the reason we needed to know that and we really started to take a look is because the provider of the education, whether it's Disney or it's the Forest Service, can ruin it at each one of those points. If you write to your ranger station to get the information about the trail or trails and where could I go, and you get a brush off, you get a heavy impact on it. You're out there having a wonderful time when the park ranger, notice I didn't say forest ranger, the park ranger gives you a ticket because you stepped on a flower, you know, crash, down comes your happening. There, you know, so it's terribly important to the provider, recreation or recreation experience, to understand that those four separate and connected steps take place in our psyche.
Something that I was thinking about here that had, I guess you would call a holding experience. I wonder what we would be thinking or feeling if that was a hotel there and we had a fine dining room, everybody served this, and we didn't have to sort our garbage. I wonder what the experience would be like.
That's why this really is so unique an experience. There's so many of those. That's a really good perception. Because those are the, you know, I'm getting not to like the words of our society, like parenting and bonding. That's a big part of the bonding here, you know, that everybody takes part in all activities.
What if we do that in congregations, instead of after worship? Okay, we got to sort the garbage.
Probably a great experience, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, right, there'd be a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
If you get someone besides my brother in a congregation to make coffee every morning, he would be very grateful. In the congregation, you often don't participate. Yeah. One of the things about Holden is everybody's openness. I'm terribly introverted until I get to hold
Your opposites come out.
How can you take that gift and perpetuate it on the outside?
Being introverted?
No, the gift of openness here. How can you overcome the being introverted on the outside? Assuming you want to.
What I notice here is that everyone that passes, I'm starting to tear up, says hello and smiles and hugs. When you back out into the world, pretty soon you pass people on the street and you go, hell. The world is so closed, the world is so open. It's a wonderful place. So.
They don't pass because they're not looking in the eye and in the flow versus the larger you get, the more people will stop being there.
Even where Lehman and I come from, these are university towns, but still, we do this, in Salem.
I think part of it is trust. I work in downtown Seattle. If you meet eye contact with everyone that you pass on the street, you may find someone following you down the street panhandling.
Yeah.
There's a little concerned about, can I look this person in the eye and smile at them and say hello? And it's really different.
There's a certain trust that you have with everybody. You trust people, or a certain honor system after the people are not going to do bad things to you. And when you go out, and this was special up here, and when you go out in the world, you can't apply the same thing.
I think we give up our power. I agree with this discussion. If we give all the power to Holden, my guess is that you made a decision to open up.
Mm-hmm.
True, but in part because everyone else was being so open. And people were, like the prayers last night, they go on and on and on. In our church congregation, that's extremely painful for people to do. Part of it, though, I think, is that the pastor is afraid to leave a void.
If there's a silence, there's almost a panic attack. And if the pastor doesn't do something, the organist does something.
Reality.
Fill it in with music.
And the voice here, the quiet, to give people a chance to put their thoughts together. Be brave enough to say something.
I think that one of the gifts of Holden, I'm not going to let you off the hook, though, but I think you really, I mean, that's a stroke. I think that that's what you decided at some point to open up.
But, well, because yeah, I liked this.
You perceive Holden as a safe place.
Right.
And I think that, just thinking about people's experience with the wilderness, too, some don't see wilderness as a safe place, and some do. And those who do then find themselves at peace with it. Those who don't, never do. That's the education process. I mean, that's what you've been doing your whole life.
Education and experience. See, until you experience that it's a safe place, nobody believes me that it is. They really, you know, ultimately you have to find that. It's one reason I don't lead trips. See, to me, I could serve no one leading a trip, because that's not what it's about. It's not about some expert taking folks out and saying, now this is how you enjoy the wilderness, what you're supposed to do, know and see. And I don't want to turn the world into a bunch of naturalists. I just want them to know it's a welcoming place that will serve them well if they learn it. And I'm using wilderness as really nature in the broadest context. It's in your backyard, it's wherever you find it. But you know, I think when you go on a pack trip with an outfitter, you know, that's recreation. That isn't any given as far as I'm concerned. If you went to Disneyland, I've never been there and never will be, because it won't give me a private audience and I don't recreate in groups. But that's recreation. We're talking well beyond that. We're talking about, you know, self, finding ourselves and therefore finding God. And we're talking about spiritual. We're talking about knowledge. And that you find yourself.
I think this whole idea of safe spaces really intrigues me, because how many of us see our congregation as a safe space for provocative discussion or for going through the garbage? I would guess not very many.
Yeah, I think that's a critical issue today. One of the things that Holden aspires to be, and this is kind of in the woodwork, I don't know where this got started, but the way I talk about it is that it aspires to be, and it doesn't succeed, you know, totally by any means, but aspires to be a place where people can tell the truth. And to the extent that it enables that, I think it succeeds, and to the extent that it fails people, that's a failure. There aren't many places where people can tell the truth. And it's certainly been my experience in many of the congregations that I've served, that it's been difficult. Prayer times have been very awkward. You know. Controversial issues have been very difficult. People don't know how to get mad or fight or disagree with passion. Because usually when that's happened in their life, then they resolve that by leaving or disassociating themselves with the other person. One of the blessings of Holden is that the boat doesn't run till next Wednesday. Or Friday, and, you know, or at least until tomorrow, you know. And in addition to that, you got to go eat with that person unless you don't want to eat, you know. And so we're forced into relationships that we would probably choose not to continue in other settings. But But I've often dreamt of how we could, and, you know, I don't have any great answers for this. I'm anxious in some ways to get out and try it myself. I'm basically a parish pastor at heart, and I'm sure that that's what I'll go back to. But, you know, how in our congregational life and in our ordinary relations do you create these safe spaces where we are able to sort the garbage together? I mean, that's a great metaphor for a whole lot of things. And how one of the things that was percolating in me again this weekend was I think one of the ways in which our society, the images of our society, do us a disfavor is that the media and even in lots, not only in the kind of advertising that we see, but a lot of other kinds of images that we pick up along the way, there's this utopic kind of presentation of how we ought to be or how life ought to be or who has it all together, who has it made, or you know, advertising is full of happy young families driving a brand new car. I mean, there's all kinds of implications there. Or we read about the people we read about are the people that have made lots of money, or they have been a big success, or something. And or we even go to school and we learn about psychological systems that seem to portray this illusionary possibility that we can have it all together. And we even have religious systems like that. I got curious about Scientology once and went through a bunch of their stuff, and they were proposing that you could become clear of all of your complexes and have life all together if you only went through all their various stages. You know, well, I don't know anybody that doesn't have complexes except people who are dead, and maybe they still have them too. I don't know. You know, I've always appreciated Thoreau's little piece, which is very popular. You've seen it probably on posters and stuff. But he writes, "Why should we be in such desperate haste to succeed, and in such desperate enterprises? If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer." We should really, of course, translate this in more inclusive language, but I'll read Thoreau. "Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. It is not," and this is the line which isn't so much quoted, but I've always liked, "it is not important that he should mature as soon as an apple tree or an oak. Shall he turn his spring into summer?" And I think what Thoreau says to me is that the task is not to arrive, but the task is to be on the journey. I always like Niebuhr's statement about, you know, you get up in the morning and you ask the question, what's God up to today? And then, you know, the challenge is to see if you can get up to what God is up to today. And there's a sense in which that's enough. And that from a spiritual and a psychological perspective, having to be something other than what you are, in a way, is a really regressive kind of force, and actually probably takes one backward. And if one could simply be satisfied with the next steps, today's steps, it's amazing how far you get if you can take one step forward at a time. Because for most of us, at least for me, it tends to be, you know, one forward and one sideways and two back. And so I guess I was thinking about how important it is for me to just take enough time each day to understand what I need to work on today, and then work on that, and trust that in the end it's going to be okay, rather than having to be like someone else or be something else or have it all together or have all the answers. Another thought that I had was how important it is for me to put myself in different situations to other than what my normal routine is, in order to get percolating, or to talk to other people, because they always bring new thoughts and ideas to me. That it's kind of like I've discovered that if I try to solve my own issues with just my own mind, it ends up in mass confusion. But if I can engage others about some of those issues, then I begin to get some clarity that I didn't have before. And so by physically putting myself into those relationships or situations is helpful. And that's why it would be so wonderful if in a congregation, for example, we could figure out how to you know, really sort the garbage together, because I think we'd really then be in a position to grow together. We have many people that come to Holland who don't like to do that. We get critiqued a lot for not being the Seattle Hilton. You know, we have resisted becoming that, and will as long as I'm the director of Holland Village. But that is a critique that...
Is it really?
Yeah, particularly during the summer. Not so much with people come in the winter, and it's not the majority of people, but it's a vocal minority.
He was very unhappy.
Yeah.
Didn't have that.
No.
Did he pledge not to come again?
No, he did.
Maybe Darwin was right about survival of the fittest.
Yeah, well, not everything, you know. There are holes in the wall at Holden, and there's tears in the carpet, and the bathrooms are down the hall, and the shower curtains aren't quite long enough, and some meals aren't what we would like them to be. You know, Holden cooks are all trained in the Holden kitchen, and they're often young folks that have never cooked before for themselves, let alone 500 people.
With the power going off with great regularity.
The ovens don't heat even when the power goes off, and the carrots didn't come in today, and that was menued, and you know, I mean, so it's an immense. It's almost like we forget we're in the middle of a wilderness. You know, and we think we can run down to the store and buy this bag of carrots that for some reason didn't show up in the boat, and God knows why. I mean, it was ordered 2 weeks ago, but, you know, and there's no way for us to get it, you know. So we're so used to a different way of dealing with our lives.
I think that's a good discussion about the community aspect of Colton. Influencing a whole lot. Having family style meals together, what a wonderful thing. Of course, with people who aren't your family. I think that influences the whole sense and feel of the place and how we make discussion here. And how you two did not provide all the answers.
Which one did we miss?
I wonder how many times we sit down to eat and we watch the evening news while we're eating.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than just eating
a real social happening.
I also think, you know, going through the garbage, just staying with me, one of the things that that would do is, well, some of the garbage gives us energy because we burn it.
Right.
And then some of the garbage we can recycle and make new again. And some of it we just can't do anything with again. And I think the same metaphors can hold true in a congregation's life, but also in people's lives. I mean, there are things in my life that are definitely baggage that stink, but not going to be silent.
We underplay that. I think that the ability to take the Holden experience back with us. My son's in solid waste. In other words, he's got a wonderful future and job security forever. And he's just moved from Portland to Seattle. But Portland instituted the recycling after Seattle. Seattle's one of the more successful cities. The interesting thing he learned is that the wealthiest neighborhoods were the first and are the almost 100%ers of the people that put out their recycled stuff. You know, the presumption being that those would be the last to come. You know, they take some green pleasure in making this small contribution when they're otherwise probably the principal consumers in the city and disposers. But he said it was really remarkable. They're the very first ones to go through the little routine of separating all their stuff and religiously once a week putting it out there at the curb and so on. It took longer in the working class neighborhoods and so on. And you know, I think this is all saleable, very saleable. I think we're all potential missionaries. And you do not have to say that. See, this, you know, Holden has always believed this is no escape. You don't come here to escape anything. And if it has value, it only has value outside of Holden. This is just a short experience. This is just a substitute for watching a football game. So take it with you and make it happen. If not you, who? Make it happen. Change your lives. Change your life, change other lives.
I listened to yesterday in the tape library to Thomas Merton's last speech that he gave in Bangkok. And it seemed really relevant to everything that went on here at Holden. And he had come across two students and was asking them who they were. And they said that we are monks. And he was amazed at the answer because they hadn't been living in a monastery, but they had been seeking a spiritual path. And so he sought for a definition of what a monk really was. And he came across, his idea was that a monk is a person who says that the claims of the world are fraudulent. And so they seek to change man's environment by changing man's consciousness. That he got into the communist aspects, the Marxist aspects of it, but he was saying that if we're really going to change our outer environment, that it has to come from within first. And so the purpose of our retreat here is that it helps us escape the fraudulent claims of the world and to regain our focus and then to take it back out into the world. And so in essence, we've been like monks for 2 weeks because we've been living in a community setting. And also, his idea, you had mentioned Friday night about Matthew Fox's sort of negative concept of original sin. And Thomas Merton viewed the doctrine of original sin as beautiful. He viewed it as more as of a Buddhist concept of eliminating your ego and not making yourself feel unworthy or completely worthless, but reducing your ego. And by doing that, you start to interrelate with other people, and then you get that connectedness that you're talking about. So he found in the doctrine of original sin that type of connectedness. And anyway, he had related that with his experience with the Dalai Lama. But it's a wonderful tape that's in the library.
Yeah, interesting. I'm trying to think of there's a good Lutheran who's written on a book entitled The Travail of Nature. It's in the library and in the bookstore. His name escapes me at the moment. But that's kind of the point that he makes in that too. He disagrees rather substantively with Fox on original sin idea. Well, any other responses? I think it is helpful to think about what you can take back. I'm fascinated with this image of sorting the garbage. We're just about out of kids now. We got one that's got another year in the household. But it would have been interesting for us to get together as a family and sort garbage, you know. Maybe that's something we should have done. I think it is helpful to, if something has been percolating with you that seems important, to find a way to hold that. Perhaps writing it down. Perhaps it's a picture in your mind. One of the things that's always been helpful for me personally is to have a holy place in wherever I have lived or worked. Actual physical space. I suppose you could call it a home altar if you want. And in that space or place to put things that I want to remember, that are central to me, and so as I, so that they just don't get buried in a book and put in a box, or but that it reminds me on a daily basis of some issues I'm working on, or some things that seem really central and important to me that I want to remember, and so I would encourage you in some way to whatever has been kind of moving with you this weekend, to find a way to concretize that somehow in writing or in an image or in a book or something, and then, you know, put it in a prominent place that where you'll see it, and then begin a conversation with it, and let it speak to you, because God can speak to us this way, and that way some of the things won't just be lost, but will be remembered and can be used. Well, we want to ask Dick now to share a few things in closing with us.
Yeah, I'm going to share a couple of readings with you, realizing we've had a lot of that, but they're important. And I think valuable. And one comes first from a Native American. You should know that much of what I've learned in about the last 10 years about myself and about nature and our connectedness with it has come from Native Americans. Readings, yes, but I don't trust too many of them because I'm not so sure how accurately they're translated. If Chief Seattle said all the things that he's been transcribed to say, then he was talking his whole life. And so it's different. And he never saw a buffalo, but buffaloes are in there, and so on it goes. So I'm a bit cautious about the reported sayings of Native Americans, and rather got them from Native Americans. And a fellow named Louis Dick on the Umatilla, and Tony Washeen and his wife on the Yakima, and learned a great deal from them. So I have a tremendous appreciation of how they understood, and we've lost the understanding. Listen to Luther standing there. The Indian and the white man sense things differently because the white man has put distance between himself and nature, and assuming a lofty place in the scheme of order of things has lost for him both reverence and understanding. And here I find the great distinction between the faith of the Indian and the white man. Indian faith sought the harmony of man and his surroundings. For one man, the world was full of beauty. For the other, it was a place of sin and ugliness to be endured until he went to another world. Uh, And spending a lot of time with the social scientists in the last years of my career, as I spent less time studying trees and grasses and things of nature, and began to understand humans, because it was humans I was serving through recreation and wilderness opportunities that we were making for them. I learned a great deal about how important setting is in our lives. You just talked of the holy place that you have and you find, you establish wherever you are. And that's a setting. I have this great dream, and it's on our master plan for this valley, of an amphitheater, just as you come into the village in a true cathedral forest, because I find it such a shame that in the summertime, particularly in the very comfortable weather, all weather's good, sun's more comfortable, that we're here. As much as I really love this setting, this is a special setting for me, but not to be out there, and in fact, my people in Elder Hostel last year, you know, they really didn't want a lot of audio-visual. I mean, here we are, and they wanted to get out, and we did. We did much better than I did the previous year, because I listened to them. And if we had that amphitheater, then, you know, Vespers out there would be pretty spectacular, I think. That last night's happening around that fire, because we could have a big fire ring there, and not have the paranoia burning the building down. So we lost this one. And that would happen with some regularity. That place would become a special setting. The people that come here would return to. Margaret recognizes correctly that there's a real need for a little place, a couple of benches scattered through here along the what is going to be the rehabilitated nature trail along that river, where people can just stop. But conversation and personal sharing is what this village is all about. And it happens everywhere, but you can create special settings. It's okay to sit around a coffee cup up there but in that old mine cafeteria, but it's a whole lot better if you create that special setting for people. So setting is terribly important in your lives. You may not have thought a lot about it, but if you do, you'll recognize that and it may be a room or a part of a place in a room. My den, I got a little Forest Service museum just about surrounding me that triggers a lot of the wonderful recall of my career and the people in it, and that's a setting for me, a special setting. So always understand that's important, and it's not always wilderness, it's whatever you make. I'll close with the reading and then my own thoughts and my own prayer for Holden and for you, each of you. This is Spirit of the Earth by John Hart, and I found this since my last visit up here. I don't think they have this in them, or do you? Maybe I did buy it, I don't know. But this is one of the more readable books. I find a lot of the spiritual ecology by Noman and so on good, but very difficult for me to sit and read in a sustained period, and it's pretty heavy, and I have to stop and reflect. This is just, it's one of those that flows, and so it's one, a theology of the land, it's one I'd recommend. But this is closing paragraph, and it's sort of a really dandy summary for what we've been sharing. The future of the earth depends on how we care for our trust of land. We have reached a fork in the road, a fork not unlike those reached time and again by our ancestors. In one direction, we can see a difficult path, one that requires discipline and sacrifice, that gradually leads to an earth in harmony. In the other direction, we can see an easier path, one allowing consumerism, complacency, that shortly leads to an earth torn by strife among people and with people. In some ways, our choice is different than that presented to past generations. We have had now, for some 40 years, the power to destroy the earth entirely in the nuclear war. We now manufacture more so than in the past toxic substances that pollute air, land, and water. We now deplete the earth's resources at a far more rapid rate than was possible for past generations. Therefore, the very future of the earth is at stake today, to the extent that the path we choose will determine whether or not the earth will survive the acts of our generations. The earth and our children await our decision. My prayer for the village is that, recognizing this special day that causes us to remember the work and words that we heard this morning and the many more that Dr. King shared with this society, I think it's most appropriate that this village achieves inclusiveness and true diversity. I feel that so strongly because I recognize the power and the strength of diversity in nature. And we have said and said and said again and read again that we are an integral part of nature, not separate or above it. And if it's such a power and such a strength in nature, then how can it be any less for a human community? Of course it can. This community is a long ways from diversity, wants to be diverse, and my prayer is that it reaches that goal in a short time. Its future existence will depend on the success or failure of reaching that. I've shared with Scott that it's my belief that any institution 10 years from now that does not, and that's companies or churches or anything else in society, in this country or in this world, that does not achieve diversity and representation of all of humankind in this country will fail, will end. So my prayer for Holden is that it achieves that goal. My commitment is to help it do that. My last thoughts to share with you is that you take those things that affected you, made sense to you, inspired you. You take them with you. You keep them. You cultivate them. Recognize that one of the greatest, and I believe the greatest value of wild places, wherever you find them, is the opportunity that they offer for you to reconnect with your own unconscious nature, your inner self, and to fill that spiritual vacuum that often exists. To prepare yourself to do that, I suggest that you find that setting of special value to you or create one. To spend the contemplative time that it takes to reconnect with the rest of nature, by listening, smelling, sensing, feeling, and truly perceiving what is about you in the grand scale and in the micro scale. Abandon any notions you still may have of superiority over other living things. My prayer for each of you is, in doing that and pursuing that, you replace cynicism with hope, boredom with wonder, pride with humility, and most important of all, stress with inner peace. I really thank you for the sharing, for the learning that came my way from you. And always know, God loves you.
Thank you, Dick. Thanks to all of you for joining us these days. And we hope that between now and the time the bus leaves, that you have a chance to wander some more. So,
thank you.
Blessings.
Thank you very much.